Hi, I'm Ben.
And I'm Teresa.
And we are
the Hindsight Hikers. This is a podcast where we talk about our trips and travels, the highs and lows, and everything in between.
We also talk about our coulda, shoulda, woulda moments in hopes to help you hike with hindsight in mind. All right, Teresa, well, we're back. It's been a while.
It's been a second, yeah.
You know what? It's not just us.
No, we have a guest.
This is a pretty exciting moment. Pretty exciting episode.
Some may say a friend. We may have just met him seconds ago, but close friends now.
That's how travel goes. You know, jump in the van, jump in the bus, just your thumbs up on the side of the road. Come on, join the journey. So without further ado, we want to introduce you all to none other than Ike. That sounds like I should say more, maybe.
That's great. I don't know. My official name is Isaac Egebraten, but a lot of people call me Ike, and I am extremely caffeinated, and I am ready to go. Thank you for having me.
We're so excited to jump into this episode. So maybe if you could just give us a quick overview of like who you are, what you love to do. You're on a pretty cool mission. Maybe you could kind of give us an insight to that.
We are on a mission to do all 63 national parks in under 3 years. And I guess the way that this started was I went to college at the University of Minnesota, where I'm originally from, and I got the job straight out of college in the finance industry. Mm. I was a math major, and I thought, I made it. I'm doing insurance and investments. I've got the marble floors. I've got the granite staircase. I've got the cool elevator that goes up to the 7th floor.
Wow.
And then when I was there, I ran out of PTO within the first 2 months.
Mm. Been there.
Paid time off. So it dawned on me very quickly, right out of college, went into the office workspace, had the so-called dream job that I had been thinking of for the past 4 or 5 years. And then it turns out that that wasn't what my actual values and priorities were. I found myself continually traveling and getting out of the office as much as humanly possible. So then that's why I ended up pursuing travel on a more consecutive basis. And originally, we were going to do the top 50 hikes in the U.S. Mm. But then, as we were doing research for that, we noticed that most of them were in national parks. Mm. And we thought, why not just go for all of them? It is 63. Yeah. And then we just kind of made up a timeline. We're like, oh, it's divisible by 3.
There's that math.
It's divisible
by 3. It was all for something.
Exactly. And as of a couple weeks ago, the trip that we'll talk about, we hit 21. So we are officially 1/3 of the way there.
Wow. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Describe maybe a little more of that decision to like jump out of your cubicle. Like, I'm sure that was probably a bit terrifying, a bit like, do I want to rock the boat? I mean, life's pretty good. Like, was that hard for you?
It wasn't necessarily hard for me in the moment. The hardest part was, of course, actually quitting a job that I hadn't started very long before that. Mm-hmm. I think that was the hardest part. I was raised in a family that doesn't quit, and it felt like that. But at the same time, more people were telling me opposite things, such as travel while you can, or do it while you can, or that can happen later. Mm-hmm. Different phrases like that were ringing true throughout anybody over the age of 30 that I was talking to. So I thought, you know what? I should probably listen to them. They know something that I don't. And so that definitely gave me the confidence to feel I was making the right decision. And of course, I'm nowhere near full-time travel at this very moment. That's what we're working toward. But the seed was planted, and I was really excited to jump into it. And the first thing that I needed to do was not be tied down somewhere every day and every week of the entire year.
Right.
And where I don't have to take PTO. And that, coupled with being in a dark cubicle in the corner and being told what to do, I guess created more motivation toward it. But overall, I've generally been a fairly headstrong person, and when I make a decision in my own head, it usually comes out of my mouth pretty quick.
Sure.
So we had no trouble moving fast in that realm. The hard part now has been spending the last 2 years trying to build a brand to where we can travel full time.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I love how you put it on your website. It all started in a cubicle with no natural light. Mm. We all need that natural light.
Isn't that great? It sounds so appealing.
It does. Yeah, super, super appealing.
Yeah, so then you kind of started this brand of yours, Ike's Hikes. And what does that all entail? Like, I've seen your website. It's super impressive. Is there, like, more to that?
Thank you. Yes. So Ike's Hikes is the official brand. We thought it had a nice ring to it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people call me Ike from my name being Isaac. And from that, the first thing that we did was we wanted to make a video for each national park. Mm-hmm. Simply put, just focus on experiencing the park and then creating a video that shows people and gives them a little taste of what they could expect when they traveled there, and also just serve as a time capsule. I think that's what we're mainly trying to do here. Is I've got a ton of pictures from my great grandpa in the 60s traveling to Yosemite and Yellowstone and the Badlands, and I thought that was so cool. And I think just having a time capsule for ourselves and anybody else that wants to watch, I think it's just really, really cool. But also what it offers is an authentic perspective on what someone could expect traveling to these national parks, because we do add a level of production to things, but we're not going so far as to take away from what we are experiencing, the goods and the bads.
For sure.
So what we do is we travel to the national park and we create a video, usually 8 to 15 minutes long, that shows our experience and then also adds in, you know, different history perspectives, the stories that are told there, as well as the most popular hike, the most popular campground, and different things like that. So just give people a general overview of what we thought traveling to this national park for the first time. And hopefully that gives someone a little bit of information, education, and inspiration to travel there themselves, is the general idea. So we do a video for each national park every 2 weeks on Wednesdays. And then we're starting to expand into different things, as you can imagine, short form content with gear reviews and mainly gear reviews, gear reviews and cooking. And we try to showcase.
Yeah, you're cooking. Oh, my goodness.
You guys eat so good, man.
We eat terrible on trips, but you guys are like gourmet.
Man, how did we gotta figure this out?
I want to travel with you.
We try our best. I think like we're solely under the belief that you can travel longer if you sleep and eat right.
Yeah.
And that's that, because I've gone on so many trips where I am so just depleted after that 6 or 7 days. Yeah. But the last year we have nailed it between focusing on diet, exercise and sleep. We have really been able to do 10, 15 day trips, feeling more energized at the end than we did at the beginning.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Cause that's the thing on a trip. You're not just like sitting, like you're hiking and you're using a lot of energy and you need to be in your prime.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're like traveling with other people, because then you can get in a little arguments or hangry.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't bode well.
Yeah, going out on a run by yourself is twofold. You get exercise and you get away from your people.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. 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 I've really enjoyed watching your videos. And I think what you said is so true. There's so much power in video, and especially what you guys are doing with the music element as well. You know, to have, you know, you just watch it and you're like, wow, that was awesome. I want to go there. I want to go, or even just like inspired to make travels and trips of your own. The other tagline of yours that I love is, I'll get you to the trailhead and then the rest is up to you. Like that's gold right there.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. That's our overall mission, is just showing people what's out there, because even I've been researching this for the past 2 years now, and I'm still like, whoa, like that's in the United States within driving distance.
Right.
And it's blows my mind every time, because a lot of people will spend, you know, they want to go to Italy, they want to travel, and they buy a ticket to Florence, Italy on a flight. And that ticket is $1,200.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to myself, I'm thinking I could do like probably 2 months on $1,200.
Yeah. Yeah.
On a road trip. So just being able to explore the US, and it's been great. I'm glad you brought up the music element too, because that's also what we're trying to do. And with the visual aspect of things, showing our experience in this park, my girlfriend Kira, she does all the video work and she's incredible with it. And also with the music element, our roommate Dylan, he is an incredible musician, and he, based on the vibe of the park, he writes an original score for each of the videos. So now what we get at the end product is our authentic experience represented through audio and visual to hopefully, you know, give that to the audience and give them a sincere and honest taste.
It's just so much art. It's just so creative.
Well, so if if Kira's doing the video and then your roommate's doing the music, what are you doing?
I'm the math guy. I'm the math guy. So I do all of the logistical end of things. So I, you know, that's a good question. What do I do?
What do you do? You're just face. Yeah.
Exactly. No, most of my time is spent planning the road trips, of course. And since we're not hitting it big by any means, we have to make them extremely cheap. So by doing that with my math background, and also through the work with local communities and local businesses, we're able to get sponsorships from that. So I'm working with brands attempting to get sponsorships, as well as putting the logistics in place on how we can arrange a 10-day trip and make sure that we get to 4 or 5 national parks and what we need to film in each of those in order to produce a great end product. And it's continually evolving, but I guess more so I'm logistics, finance, and sponsorships would be my role.
Very cool.
Very key. Very, very necessary.
Yes.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about like doing trips, trying to do them cheap. I think especially people, there's different demographics. Maybe the older demographics don't need to be as cheap, but especially younger travelers, like cheap is life. To if you want to travel, it has to be affordable. So yeah, do you want to like dig into your experience of traveling and how to do it frugally?
Yeah. Travel is often determined as a expensive hobby. And I see the logic there, but also with proper preparation and just a little bit of like knowledge of what's going on in the area you're traveling to, it really doesn't have to be, and it can be extremely cheap. If we take that Florence, Italy flight, for example, I just had a friend that booked that. That's why I'm bringing it up. But if we take that example of $1,200 for a flight, I just got off of a road trip with Kira, Dylan, and I, where we spent $1,200 almost on the nose for a 10-day road trip. So three people, $1,200.
Do the math. What is that?
It's right around $400 a piece.
Wow.
And that's our goal mainly, is getting it so cheap where it's like, why wouldn't we go?
Yeah.
So the way I like to separate it out, people like to add a bunch of extra things. We'll get to that. First and foremost, you got to get there.
Yep.
So the number one is travel. The travel expense can either make or break you right off the bat.
Yeah. Not much flex there.
No. So a flight and rental car is probably going to be toward the more expensive end
of things. Rental cars, man.
Yeah.
No.
Come on.
No.
So pricey.
We did rent a Tesla, and that actually worked out pretty well because gas was cheap then. But number one being travel, where the flight and the rental car is going to be toward the more expensive end. But if you travel with 3 or 4 people in a relatively efficient car, it's going to be significantly cheaper. So for that trip that we're referring to, we went out to New Mexico and Texas, White Sands, Guadalupe Mountains, Carlsbad Caverns, and Big Bend. And I actually listened to a couple episodes of yours, and that's how we got in contact.
Sweet.
Referring to those parks and trying to learn more about them. But with that trip from Phoenix, it ended up being around 3,000 miles. Oof. And the total cost in gas, grand total, was like $350.
Isn't that crazy?
It's wild.
That's like one flight.
Yeah,
exactly. So if you split that three ways, we're talking like $120 about for each person. Okay, so then that gets added to the budget. And then the second part of things that can either make or break you is lodging.
Yeah.
Lodging is you can go all the way up to like a nice hotel in the city, or you can go all the way down to BLM camping.
Just dirt.
And that's where we like to sit.
Dirt.
Yes. And I think like the most beautiful campsites I've ever been in have been BLM. Free.
For sure.
100% free.
Yep. Yeah.
And for anybody that doesn't know what BLM is, it's Bureau of Land Management Land. Bureau of Land Management Land. Yes. And what it does is it's basically extra land that the government has that is managed by the BLM service. And what they do is it's kind of free range where you can camp on there, you can be on there, no permits, no sign up required for most areas. And what people do is throughout time, they've developed campgrounds within this free exposed land. So the best place that I go to find BLM land is The Dirt. It's thedirt.com, whatever it is. And they do a good job if you just search free camping near Las Cruces, New Mexico. So BLM being at $0 and in a hotel or Airbnb even being at $200-$300, there's quite a big range there. So in order to get it super cheap, we stick toward the BLM land and campsites.
Yeah.
And the grand total for lodging for that trip, we even did two Airbnbs, which were like 50, 60 bucks a night.
Splurge.
Oh yeah. Yeah. the average price per night was I think $15, which makes it a total of $150 for 9 nights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just amazing what you can do if you just set it up and work backwards, especially with BLM land being free. You do have to do a little bit of research beforehand, but that's the cost savings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really feels like the way it should be or like the way it used to be. Cause I don't know, especially like when you're really traveling, you're not even really at your campsite, you know, much more than to sleep, maybe cook a meal or something, you know?
Right.
And so it's like, we're hardly even using this. Can we just like borrow it and pitch a tent?
Right.
And like you said, you can get in just some crazy spots. There was one that we slept at where it was actually like in like a free range of cattle. And, you know, in the middle of the night, there were cows at our tent. It's just like,
was that in Las Cruces?
No, it was in Utah.
Oh, okay. But I was gonna say, I just did a similar thing.
Yeah.
Just cows. Yeah.
Right. There's a big bull like with horns and everything that we woke up and was staring at us.
No.
Maybe 20 yards away from our
wildlife
tent.
Wildlife encounter.
Like,
look at that.
I know. Should we be concerned or not? I don't know.
Smelling your good food that you're cooking.
Right. Right. But yeah. Oh, speaking of food, that's actually the third thing. So we have travel and lodging, which is really flexible. You can get that almost negligible if you want. The third thing and final thing in terms of actually being able to execute a trip is food. And this one is difficult to work around because you need to eat. So you can't get free meals everywhere. That's not really going to work too well. That's called begging.
That's cool.
And so in order to get food cheaper, you kind of need to cook, and you need to cook for yourself, and you need to cook in a group. And because, for example, even if you do fast food, we're talking $8-$10 a meal. And if you're talking like an actual restaurant, well, you're getting up to the $20-$30 average per meal.
Right.
So the way I like to break it down is per day, in terms of how much you need to eat per day. And in groceries for that same trip, that was our largest expense, and it was about $500 for 10 days of groceries. So if you break that down, that's pretty good. But it's like, you know, $150 to $200 a person for food over those 10 days.
Right.
And then you can break it down to the day rate for there. But that's when you cook for yourself, that we're talking like $2 or $3 a meal, as opposed to 8, 10, 20, 30. So being able to cook and investing in that Blackstone or investing in that Coleman grill is going to save you a ton of money on the back end for sure. But those are the three things, and that's how I market.
So I'm assuming that you've probably been there before on a trip where you just ate PB&J. Like, was this like, did you learn it that you needed to eat well, or have you always eaten well on trips?
I have not always eaten well on trips. I would say my first road trip ever was right after we graduated high school. Myself and three guy friends, we took a Ford Expedition, and we went out to Medora, Teddy Roosevelt, Yellowstone, Rocky Mountain, and then back up through the Black Hills back into Minnesota. And throughout that trip, I can guarantee you we ate absolute garbage.
Hey, but you survived.
Yeah, right. As 18-year-old boys, we did not eat well at all. But throughout the last several years, when I was about 20 years old, I had a year of stomach issues, and I still don't know what that exactly was. But honestly, it's a blessing now, because throughout that year, I went through everything I ate. I learned everything about what not to eat, what to eat. And I did quite a bit of research to try to get myself out of this stomach issue phase. And then it kind of just disappeared on its own. And then over the last few years, I'm 23 now, I've really taken that research that I did when I was 20, and I love it. Like, that's part of my life now. Is I just got done reading Dr. Mark Hyman's book, Food, What the Heck Should I Eat? Incredible read if anybody's interested. It basically just goes through what the heck you should eat. incredible book, and I learned a ton from that in terms of diet and what's going to inflame your gut and what is going to help your gut microbiome and different things like that. So I really do enjoy learning about it, and I get to now apply that on the trips that we go. So I guess also in addition to the logistic side of things, I try to keep everybody healthy with the food stuff. So,
So
I don't know, love me or hate me for it, whatever it is. It's that's part of my role too. but it's been
you'll be thanked when you're at that last stretch of the hike and everyone's
exactly, you know. No, but it's, I just love learning about it. I read quite a bit about it, and I love to experiment with myself with different types of foods and flavors and how it affects my metabolism and body. And I just find it really interesting. So I guess that helps. And that's probably why I spend a lot of time doing that.
Yeah.
But there definitely aren't, like, you can't always eat well when you're traveling. What's your go-to, like, you're on a long hike and you need just something in your backpack. What's your, like, healthy
interesting
go-to option?
Okay. I've been switching up quite a bit, but right now what I would bring on a hike for protein, I would bring a beef jerky of some sort. My favorite is Old Trapper peppered beef jerky. It's absolutely incredible. And in addition to that, there's this Think bar. It's basically a low sugar, high protein bar. It kind of tastes like chalk, but I honestly like that.
But so does our 9-month-old. He loves chalk.
He does eat a lot of chalk.
That's hilarious. Yeah. He would love this then. So protein is that beef jerky and that Think bar. And then on top of that, I love almonds. Those are, like, provide a lot of fat. And then almond butter, my girlfriend and I will go through a jar of almond butter almost every day or two.
Just by itself?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever had almond butter.
Really? Oh.
What does it taste like, almonds?
No, it's way better. It's like, imagine it's like peanuts to peanut butter, right? You like, it tastes similar, but like peanut butter is so much better than just straight peanuts.
So much better.
That's true.
But you got to try it, because I think it's like high in fiber, high in fat, but whatever. It's delicious, and we get the crunchy almond butter from Trader Joe's, unsalted. That's the best stuff. Mm. That's where I would recommend starting. No, okay. But
I have to.
You heard it first, right here.
No, that's the best stuff, and I don't know if I'm embarrassed to say this.
We don't have Trader Joe's, but could I find it at the Piggly Wiggly?
I'm sure you can find it. You can find almond butter anyway. Like, just get the crunchy, unsalted.
Aldi's.
I'm sure. It might not be as good, but it'll be pretty good.
I'll look it up. I'll look into it.
Perfect. Yeah, but no, we just eat that literally with a spoon.
Oh, man.
I know but for hiking specifically, there is a thing called trail butter, which has, like, different flavors of almond butter. They throw honey and maple syrup and almond butter, and it's in, like, one of those go-go squeeze packs.
Oh.
That's a pretty good idea. Otherwise, I know Justin's has peanut butter and almond butter in, like, these white packets that are pretty good, like, serving sizes. So bring a banana and some almond butter. That's going to hit different out there.
Then you're set. Mm-hmm. And do you wait till you get to the climax of the hike to eat? When do you...
No.
Like, are you systematic? Like, I got to make it one more mile before I can get into my snacks.
I have been systematic about it. There was one trip that was like, good guess. there was
the spreadsheet, man.
Oh, I'm a big spreadsheet guy. There was one trip where we did 20 miles in a day in Yosemite, and I was pretty worried about it because I had just heard the term bonking, which is when your blood sugar goes too low where you can't really get it back up without rest. So you want to eat as you go then, so you don't absolutely tank your blood sugar and then you can't get it back up. So I was worried about that. I had it all parsed out. Like, it was like 300-400 calories every 45 minutes. And honestly, I felt like crap at the end. So I don't think it worked.
Really?
It might have been the hike. It might have been the 6 cliff bars. I don't know.
Could have been the 20-minute hike or the 20-mile.
It was something like that. But I have parsed it out. But now what I do is I just, you know, I don't do many 20-milers right now. I haven't for a while. I'd like to do more. But if I were to do that, yes, I would stagger it out quite a bit so to avoid bonking. Sure. But a short 4 or 5 mile hike, I'm not really too worried about it. I'm just going to eat whenever I'm hungry or whenever I crave it.
What was the 20-mile hike you did?
We did Mirror Lake up to Tenaya Lake and then back through, went past Half Dome and then back down the John Muir Trail to the waterfalls and then back to Mirror Lake Trailhead. So it was incredible, but I think it was a total of like 30 miles over only 2 days of hiking. So it was
like high elevation.
Yeah. It was a burner, especially that first round of switchbacks. I can't remember what it's called, but it was an incredible hike though. I think throughout like the middle section, I think we only saw like one or two other people throughout the entire day, which is, if you're ever out hiking, you know that that's a special thing.
Yeah, that's sweet. Right.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
It was beautiful, though.
Especially in Yosemite.
Mm-hmm. Yosemite specifically, busy. If you're looking to get the best bang for your buck, I would definitely backpack Yosemite. I've done it where you just drive in and do the attractions. Very different experience. If you actually get into the backcountry a little bit, not saying you have to go crazy, just a night, a couple miles in, nothing crazy. It is a completely different perspective, completely different angle on the park. And wow, it's absolutely beautiful, incredible. And if you're just driving in, it's also beautiful and incredible, but there's cars and there's traffic and there's honking and there's lines and it's not
people.
It feels like an amusement park.
Yeah. Because everybody wants to go to Yosemite. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah.
What's on your list, like, to count as like hitting the national park?
Just you a get picture with the sign.
Damn, like you get the campground, the high,
That picture, that's important.
Right, that is the first and most important thing. Don't forget the picture, and don't wait until the end of the trip when you think, oh no, we passed it, we'll get it later.
Oh, yeah.
Because you won't get it later.
Right. You will not.
So that's step number one, of course. Take a picture by the sign. They're iconic. My favorite sign is the Death Valley sign. It's beautiful. Yes. They did a whole remodel on it. But after getting the sign picture, of course, visitor center is, people sometimes skip over that, wanting to get into the park. Visitor center is a very important part to me to hit early on and right away. Seems pretty obvious, but it gives you a lot of perspective into what you're walking into and also knowledge, of course, that you wouldn't have had from, say, Google or something like researching online. I think the visitor center, even just walking into the visitor center, approaching the ranger at the desk and saying, hey, I've got one day, I'm fit, what can I do? They've answered that question like 80 times already that day.
So they're gonna
have something good for you. So I would go in, listen, and then also check out the exhibit a little bit, know what you're walking into, especially if there's a safety concern, make sure you know what you're walking into. And then also, it's so fun because we like to joke around quite a bit. But we'll take all these little tidbits. For example, from White Sands, it's gypsum sand. And we like to like throw these big words that we just learned around. Like, oh, this is such beautiful gypsum sand. We're just using the new terminology. And it's fun, though. It's fun. And when you refer to it later with friends talking about your trip, it's huge to know for yourself that you learned something from the park. And I think the Visitor Center is a great place to do that. But from the visitor center, after you get your tidbits from the park ranger, he's probably going to recommend some of the more popular hikes to you if you're fit, and attack those. I mean, most of the national parks are set up to hike, and if they're not set up to hike, make sure to do the scenic drive and then stop at as many viewpoints as possible. But other than that, it's really up to you and your own interests. If you're going to Yosemite to rock climb, you're probably going to forget everything I just said.
Sure. Yeah.
But there's several different things to do. And that's also what we're trying to bring to our audience through the video, is what each park is known for and what you can do within those parks. So, for example, Joshua Tree would be stargazing and rock climbing. And so on and so forth.
Yeah, like what it's known for.
Right. And make sure just hit as many of those as you can. And at the end of the day, you shouldn't be like bang, 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 trying to get everything done in the day. At the end of the day, you should just sit and look and absorb. And that's really the best you can do, is just be present in that space. Yeah, there's so many things to do, and it depends on the park. So just make sure you look into where you're going and what there is to do. It's pretty apparent, even if you just search it on TikTok or whether you go to the National Park page, you'll find what is the most popular thing to do. And honestly, if you're like me, I like to go towards the least popular things a little bit, but find the middle ground anyway, where, you know, there aren't necessarily the crowds, especially in the more busy parks. But I think also too, part of going to a national park for the first time is more so figuring out which ones I want to go back to. So by going,
Or like every day, you know, maybe you had bad weather. I was watching one of your videos. I think it was Petrified Forest. You had like just terrible. It was like, like unheard of weather.
It was horrible.
Kind of ruined it.
The park ranger was calling it the storm of the century, and we were. It was a blizzard for sure in Arizona, which is wild in itself,
in Arizona.
A warmer part of Arizona. And that was our second national park, so we didn't know what we were doing either. And we had a day and a half scheduled there. And Petrified Forest, if you don't know, is basically just a scenic drive with a few pullouts. Beautiful park, but not incredibly too much to do. And we were planning on backpacking there. So we go up into the ranger station, and we're talking to them, and we say, hey, can we get a backcountry permit? And they say, are you serious? And we're like, yeah, of course. Like, we're ready to go. And they were telling us that there was 60 to 70 mile an hour winds that night.
Oh, my gosh.
And we're like, oh, no. We're in Holbrook, Arizona, which is kind of in the middle of nowhere, if you don't know where that is.
Yeah.
And so my roommate and partner here, Dylan, him and I were like, okay, well, let's just try to park like we're going to backpack and just sleep in the van. And so then we did that. And then in the morning, the park ranger pulls up on us. And I'm thinking we're going to be in trouble for camping in the park. But I roll down my window. It's like 7 a.m. And he goes, do you guys know it's going to be the storm of the century? And we're like, no. And as we are trying to drive through the park and see everything, the blizzard keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And then by the end of it, the place that we had seen with a desert floor had about an inch or two of snow on it by the time we finished it. And it was a blast of a trip, but we definitely did not get the textbook version of Petrified.
For sure didn't go as planned. Yeah, like you can't plan that type of weather scenario.
No, but it's great. And so by going through all the parks and seeing them once, I'm sure I'll get it trimmed down to about 20 of them that I'll consistently go to for years to come.
Do you have a park that you're just like bucket list, like this is the one I'm most excited about hitting?
I think Gates of the Arctic is probably the one I'm most excited for.
How do you get there? Like, what are you?
That's the exciting part.
I love it.
There's a lot that I'm really excited for, especially in Alaska. I'm really, really excited for that stint of time. And especially Gates of the Arctic, because the visitation in 2021, I think, was 10,000 people. As opposed to something like Great Smoky Mountains, which is over 13 million this year. So
10,000 is more than, like, how did 10,000 people find that place?
That's a great question. It's
I was expecting it to be like 10, like 10 people.
Right. It's really, really far north. And there's a very limited season that you can travel there successfully, especially trying to get someone to fly out there with a plane. I don't know. It sounds exciting. It sounds extreme. It sounds difficult to get to, and it sounds really cool. Gates of the Arctic. I mean, that's a really cool name.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool name. Yeah. Because there's not even a visitor center there, right?
I couldn't tell you. I haven't done the research for it yet.
Sure. You're going to go.
When people ask us, like, oh, are you guys going to hit all the parks? The first park I bring up is Gates of the Arctic. I'm like, no, we can't because there's this park in Alaska that's just so far out there.
Well, if I give you a call in 6 months, that's what it's for. We're going to go to Gates of the Arctic.
We're coming, yeah. And you're cooking.
Because if you travel together, it's cheaper,
exactly.
Right? So there we go.
Exactly. That's what we're doing.
So, I don't know. Do you have more on the, like, traveling frugal?
Primarily what we're hitting on is travel, lodging, and food. Travel and lodging are definitely going to be a bit more flexible. Food, you need to eat. And then after that, it's really up to you. If you want to, you know, splurge a little bit, as they say, if you wanted to splurge a little bit, you could hire a guide to bring you to certain areas of the park. Mm. You could go on that whitewater rafting experience. You could go to a fancy restaurant along the way in New York City. Whatever it is, whatever your splurge is, you have to think of it as that. It's discretionary. You can do with it what you have. But the whole paradigm that travel is expensive is just false. And you can travel very cheaply. And even if you are going international, there are plenty of people that can tell you all about credit card jumping and hacks and backpacking and different things like that that can also make international travel fairly cheap. We subscribe to a newsletter called The Daily Drop. It's by Kara and Nate. Mm. They're a traveling couple, but they do really great work, and they have all of these different tips and tricks on traveling really cheap internationally too. So I think it's really up to you. But if you want to do a 10-day road trip and under $400, it is very possible and it is very attainable. The biggest expense to you is taking the time off, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge.
True.
Yeah, and one way that we've kind of tried to look at it too is not referring to it as a vacation. Mm. You know, it's a trip. You know, it's that mindset of like, you know, we're not going to like pamper ourselves. Mm-hmm. Like it's going to get, you know, the nitty gritty, it's dirty, you know, but it's like that experience. It just like, I'm sure you've experienced it, you know, it just like makes you come alive. Like you just feel alive in those moments. Cause it's just, I don't know how to describe it.
Right. You know? I absolutely love that. So we have one of these t-shirts that we sell. It's the 6 days, no shower t-shirt. And that feeling at 6, 7, 8 days without a shower is kind of strange because day two or three is honestly the worst because you're like, oh, I'm getting gross. But then by like 6, 7, 8, you're like, I am one with nature.
I'm over it. Yeah. And
your hair starts doing cool stuff.
Right. Yeah. Right. And you're like, wow, this is how people actually lived. So I think it's really fun. I think it's great. And it offers just a full reset of my priorities in life and material objects, especially when you're out on the road or you're out backpacking, you can only bring so much. And then within that experience, you realize how much you actually don't need. So I think between that and the actual like body detox that you do from hiking, getting a lot or too much sun, and then also being like not showering for so long, I think really is healthy for you. And I feel like a million bucks by like day 6, 7, 8. And then after I shower, it's like, dang it, I lost all my scuzz.
I gotta start over again.
That shower does feel good though. That does feel like, wow. There's so many layers on me right now.
It's
so
incredible. It takes a good 2 or 3 showers sometimes.
So just like on that note of dreaming, like what do you have next? We know your big goal is to hit all the parks, but maybe just like immediate, what's next for Ike?
What's next? For 2024, our goal is to get 26 national parks knocked off. That puts us at pace to get to 63 in 3 years. So the next trip that we're taking, actually, which is cheaper than $1,200 for four people, if you'd believe it. So we're absolutely crushing it budget-wise on this one.
Wow.
We're going to go to Utah and Colorado, and we're doing Arches, Canyonlands, Arches, Canyonlands, Black Canyon of the Gunnison, Great Sand Dunes, and then Mesa Verde. And we're going to hit five national parks, 10 days. There's going to be four of us, Kira, Dylan, and Dylan's girlfriend, Lou. And we're absolutely pumped for it. That's going to happen right in the middle of May, right before the crowds start coming, and right in that peak weather spot. So we're super pumped to go check out Utah and Colorado. And then other than that, not a whole lot until we look into August, September, and October. Now, this is going to be a big one. This is like what we've been working the last few years for. We're going on a two-month music tour in combination with the national park stuff.
I love it. That's great.
Dylan, being the incredibly talented musician he is, we want to take him to the street, and we're going to go out east, looping all throughout the northern part of the country, and then back down the east coast, and then loop back through Tennessee into Minnesota again. And that's going to take place over 2 months. We're going to hit nine national parks along that.
Oh, cool.
We're going to be playing in hopefully about 16 different cities, showcasing Dylan's music too. So that's the big one off in the near distant future. And then next month we've got Utah and Colorado. So we've got a lot coming up, and we are extremely excited. That's like one of the last things I'll say too, is that the people you travel with, you get to form such an intimate connection with them that you wouldn't normally have without being forced into a car for 10 days with no showers.
Good point.
Or that like awkward, like we've been on the road for 6 hours.
Right.
What else do I have to talk about?
Right. You have to go deep. Otherwise you're going to be bored out of your mind. So yeah, I think that's really overall why I'm doing this. You get to see some really incredible things, but at the end of the day, it's the people you travel with and being able to form like that intimate connection that only happens through those experiences and challenges. So I think if anything else, travel to build a more intimate relationship with people, being stuck in a car with them when they smell bad, I think is one of the greatest things.
Totally. That's good stuff.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for your words of wisdom. And for anyone listening, check out Ike's Hikes YouTube.
For real. He's website. Got like a super awesome website. It's definitely like a rabbit hole. Be careful. When you go on there, you're going to just want to keep going. And there's more and there's more and there's more. So really good stuff. Thanks a lot for being on here with us, man.
Thank you too so much. It was wonderful to finally get to meet you. And I am not wise by any means, but you can't get wise and old if you aren't young and crazy. So we are doing that now.
And with that, you know what? Just keep
on hiking.
Heck yeah. Thank you all so much. I really appreciate it, guys.